Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Sajjan Tamasanti mentioned we're spend the day making a it's called a stupa. It's like a cairn or a shrine to put the ashes of our neighbors, Peter and Mary, in. And it's a traditional Buddhist way of honoring the memory of somebody. So it's sort of the third anniversary of Peter's passing, and it's almost the first anniversary of Mary's passing. So that, and they're, of course, we've been using the property and the place this last year. It's been a great benefit. I think one of the things that comes from to just making some sort of shrine or something to commemorate either a person or an event is just coming together and working together and sharing, putting an effort into something. There's a great benefit that comes from that. So that was a very pleasant day, getting soaked in the rain together and getting bruised with rocks. And good fun. And after working today, we had tea together, and one of the things that came up in conversation was just I was sharing a bit of about Ajahn Chah's the stupa that we made for Ajahn Chah, and that similarly on a much larger scale provided an opportunity for the students, disciples, those who respected or had heard of Ajahn Chah to come together and do something that created a sense of a connection and and sort of holding the community to get working together. So that was because it's Ajahn Chah had many disciples, many branch monasteries, and we had a year between the time that he died and the time that we did his cremation, and we couldn't start on this chedi or the stupa while he was still alive, because there was so much resistance, even though it was completely impractical. There was just so much resistance amongst some of the disciples and followers, that it was disrespectful to be building a place to for his cremation and while he's still alive. So that and we couldn't even design it. We started and met a lot of resistance. So when he died, then we started to design the place, and it was quite large, because we knew that there was going to be a large gathering, and as it actually happened during the cremation ceremonies, that there was about somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 people. So to have ceremonies happen, it needed something fairly large. And but what it did was once we started building it, then at any given time there's usually about 200 monks working on it and living at the monastery, working and many, many lay people, and everybody came together and helped out. And that is the willingness to give of our time and effort is something that brings us together in a very positive way, useful way. It's like we quote it fairly often, but it's good to sort of quote again Ajahn Sumedho's sort of simple saying of just saying, whenever I think of myself, I suffer. So that just doing something for somebody else is a way to overcome suffering. Mm-hmm. And it's quite beneficial. So that just recollecting the goodness of another person, recollecting the debts of gratitude that we have. We don't live on the planet or within society independently. We can't function in an isolated way. It's just not possible. We can try to preserve the illusion of that sometimes, but it's hard to prop up. So that just the recognition of the web of of interdependence and sharing that is natural. Even if we don't give anything tangible, we're always having to share and rely on each other in very many ways, different ways. So just having that that recollection. The Buddha's encouragement things that he said in place of say that which creates harmony. One of the first things that he mentioned was giving or sharing, the sense of generosity in giving, so that by giving and giving up, we create a quality of harmony, create a sense of let's say shared purpose. Another quality which is say kind speech, be a vajja, speech that is kind of tender or loving, sort of the opposite of harsh and critical speech. That sense of recognizing that our particularly as human beings, our modes of communication, we rely on speech a lot. And the hasty speech or impulsive speech or critical or speech that's confrontational is creates division and separation, and is not very helpful, useful. Recollecting, reminding ourselves, trying to, and it's hard to do. Speech is like in terms of the where we take precepts, whether it's lay people taking the five precepts or eight precepts, whether it's the monastics taking their precepts or recollecting their precepts, almost certainly. Kind of the first transgression, the first mistakes we make are in speech. Our mouths are far too quick for our mindfulness. Usually stuff comes out of our mouth before our mind can catch up to it, so it really creates problems. So just recollecting and reminding ourselves of that is very helpful, necessary, and trying to remember how important is that speech that is kind or is loving, how important, how the benefits that come from that. The next thing that the Buddha said were that created a sense of reconciliation or harmony is what's called apacharya, or conduct which is useful. So those things which are have some purpose, have some function, have some are not just sort of frivolous or not well thought out. Things that are, say, of service. Creating conduct and actions which are of service to other people. And that, again, just where that, like sometimes one of the things that the Buddha advises when we're in conflict with somebody or have anger, holding a grudge to somebody, one of the things that the Buddha advises is just giving a gift to somebody. It's an act of, goes against the grain, but it's an act of service. And it can be, you know, whether it's a physical gift or a gift of helping them out in some way. It helps to really undermine our own holding of a grudge, or and also creating a sense of a bond or an affiliation, which is positive with another person. So that these, say, deeds of service are helpful to, say, in human society, to allow us to live together. The last thing the Buddha said was helpful to conciliation and living together is what he called samanapatha, which is an evenness in our conduct. And so oftentimes when we're in a good mood, we're really ebullient, we're happy to do something, or and when we're not in a good mood, we're in a bad mood, then we don't want to deal with a situation, we don't want to deal with people, and we go up and down. And when we're going up and down like that, and it's confusing for people. it's confusing for ourselves. But so that really trying to be attentive to evening out the ways that we just say act impulsively on our moods, and act impulsively on our feelings, and so really trying to not be just a slave to our moods and our impressions, and recognize that it can be and the evenness doesn't mean that it's just totally flat, but it's just not, it's more tempered by circumspection and attentiveness, rather than just driven by feelings and moods, which, you know, it's just ordinary that our moods are changing, our views are changing, our opinions are changing. It's not being caught in them all the time. It's really helpful to, for our own evenness. And another way of looking at that sense is also an evenness in how we approach things in terms of how sometimes when we begin something we're really enthusiastic, and by the time we get to the end of it we're totally bored and fed up. Or we start something, a project, with extraordinary diligence, and then get halfway through it, and it's really spotty and not really putting our hearts in it. So that keeping an evenness of or trying to keep an evenness, trying to pay attention to a more evenness in terms of how we approach either a relationship with a situation or a person or a particular task that we're doing, really trying to keep an evenness with that. And it really makes a big difference. Again, it makes a big difference in how we enjoy something and appreciate it, and then also how it's viewed and received with others. That we have to live together with. So it's these are qualities which the Buddha pointed to, and they're useful to remember, remind ourselves. It's that sense of generosity, of kindly speech, of say deeds of service, acts of service, and an evenness is a they're very useful tools, say, in our toolbox of life. I think also in say something that came up in again when we're building a stupa or shrine to put Peter and Mary's ashes in is just to get the extraordinary uncertainty of life, of what we think we can rely on, and that recollection of death, certainty of death. Is really helpful for bringing a sense of urgency or immediacy into practice, into living our life in a way which is not wasting time. Particularly in these sort of times of so much chaos within the world, that I really want to make our intentions very clear within ourselves, and really try to focus on bringing whatever goodness, whatever virtue, whatever wisdom we have, really bringing it into the foreground. And that, because sometimes one of the things that thinking, oftentimes when we're practicing, we're looking to a technique, or looking to a particular method, or looking to some particular form as if it's going to be the the cure-all for everything, or the answer to everything. As if I had the right technique, or I had the right method, or if I had the right belief, or if I had the right whatever. If only I had that, then I would be okay. And And it reminds me of a story in the Tibetan tradition where a monk is sitting doing circumambulations of a shrine and reciting mantras, and which is part of the practice and training, doing the rituals and devotional practices. Oftentimes they'll be doing, say, reciting mantras with a rosary or doing a prayer wheel. And he's doing that quite diligently and doing circumambulations around the shrine. And then his teacher walks past and said, "Yeah, those circumambulations and that very, very good practice. But maybe you should try the real Dhamma. You know, try practicing more real Dhamma." What do you mean by that? So I thought, maybe he thinks this devotional practice is not so, maybe what I should be doing is reading sutras. That's what I should be doing. So then he goes and gets the texts and scriptures, and he's sitting studying and reading the scriptures, getting really trying to get as much knowledge and learning as possible, and he throws himself into that. And after some time, his teacher says, "Yes, reading the scriptures is really good, but it would be better if you practiced the real Dhamma." Really frustrated now. What does he mean by real Dhamma? Must mean I should be meditating. I'm not doing as much meditation as I should. So then he starts getting really diligent in doing meditation, and sitting, counting his breath, doing sitting meditation, sitting for long hours, quietly, of course. His teacher comes along after some time and says the same thing. "Yes, meditation is good, but maybe you should be practicing the real Dhamma." And finally, he's just so totally frustrated. "What do you mean by I've been doing all these things which are everybody recommends? What do you mean by practicing the real Dhamma?" And he said, teacher answers very soon, "Just renounce his life. And that cuts to the heart of it, in the sense of not holding to our sense of, one is that recollection of death, and then a sense of relinquishing all the agendas that we tend to have. Which doesn't mean that we don't, because one of the basic recollections is actually the preciousness of human life. But if it's not in the perspective of the uncertainty of life, or the presence of and the possibility of death, then it's easy to just sort of follow along, following desires, interests, fascinations, distractions, and not really making using our discernment and as much as we should. So that relinquishing or renouncing of life, recognizing the shortness of human existence, is really important. And then when whatever practice we do from that, will be really there'll be an immediacy there. There'll be an integrity there. There'll be a real appreciation there. Yeah. And then all the other practices fall into place. Yeah. All the other practices have a real efficacy to them. So that sense similarly with the in our tradition, one of the recollections that the Buddha encourages us in monastic training is just the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? It's very simple, but it's so easy to let pass by. Remind ourselves and to really bringing forth that effort at establishing a sense of balance, wholesomeness, skillfulness within the heart. Because sometimes our effort is oftentimes measured by external things. You know, how much I do. If I'm putting forth effort, I think if I do a lot of sitting meditation or walking meditation or reading scriptures or circumambulations or whatnot, if I do a lot of it, then I'm doing good. But it's more around the quality that one brings to it, the quality of heart that one puts into it, the kind of integrity of intention that we are able to focus on and sustain. And that's very internal and is very moment to moment. It's not really about, you know, if I get enough practice in, then sometime in the future I'll get my results. I'll get it all back somehow. Or putting the attention, recognizing that what we do in the present moment, the quality with which we bring to our practice, is also what we experience. So these qualities of bringing an immediacy to the practice, but also recognizing it's that sense of maintaining a sense of wholesomeness and well-being in the practice. Because sometimes we can be trying to bring an immediacy into the practice and we start trying too hard, trying out of fear-driven or anxiety-driven or result-driven, greed-driven. And there's so many different ways. And so like just checking, turning attention back into the heart itself and recollecting, okay, what's the intention? What's the result? What's the motivation? How does it feel? And trying to bring not making too much of it, but establishing oneself in a sense of letting go, renouncing the relinquishing our attachments to it, or that how we perceive it. I am going to be a good practitioner. I need to be something. So relinquishing life, relinquishing our sense of self. And that's where the quality of peace is really able to be established. So relinquishing our sense of self. You know, whether it's whether we're diligent or whether we're lazy, whether it's easy or it's difficult. It's really sort of saying, okay, how do I create a sense of self and attachment either in engaging in the world or internally within my own practice, so that attention is bringing it into the heart, drawing, and that's where we study the Dhamma, that's where we learn the Dhamma, that's where we sort of learn the teachings of the Buddha. And it's not there's the teachings externally, there's the scriptures which are extensive, but where we really understand and need to understand the teachings is in our own experience, in our own heart. So just drawing it back into there. And sometimes it seems so simple, like simplistic. And on a certain level it is. And the problem is that we make it complicated, or we're always looking past, or looking for peace somewhere else, or we're always looking for truth outside somewhere else, other than just in our own experience and in our own heart. Reminding oneself of that, so that we have the opportunity to realize that, we can understand these teachings, we can live them, we can experience them, we can experience the fruits of them. It's not beyond the capability of any of us, which is, say, what the Buddha said. If you weren't capable of this, I wouldn't teach it to you. Okay. So, for that, for reflection this evening.